Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Environmental issues are a focus on this member drive edition of the program. We're going to talk about current concerns like the Great Salt Lake and look to the future with Wayne Wurtzbach and Jack Green. Wayne Wurtzbach is a professor emeritus in the Watershed Sciences Department at USU. He's also a skilled photographer. In fact, his image of the Wellsville Mountains is on our UPR new art mug, which you can get for $10 a month. I'll put a plug in right there. Wayne Wurtzbach, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Jack Green is a nature educator. He's also a regular contributor to UPR's Wild About Utah. Jack, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
So as we thought about environmental concerns, we definitely want to talk to you two gentlemen. Before we get into the current environmental concerns, I want to get a little bit of background. There's some things I know, things I don't know, I'm sure, about each of you gentlemen. Wayne Wurtzbach, longtime professor, right, at USU. Remind me your areas of research specialties.
Well, I started out and got some degrees in fisheries and water pollution. And then a final degree at UC Davis in ecology. And I worked a lot on fish initially up at Bear Lake and some of the reservoirs here in Utah. But then I've kind of shifted to a field called limnology. A lot of people don't know that term, but it's essentially inland oceanography. So we study lakes and the geology, chemistry, biology, that sort of thing. I've worked a lot on Great Salt Lake for maybe 35 years on and off. I worked up in the Sawtooth Mountains on the sockeye salmon recovery project at Bear Lake on the native fish up there. So I've been around a bit, and I've worked internationally some as well.
Maybe just personally, how did you get into these fields? I know you've spent a lot of time outdoors. Part of that is your research, right? Part of it's maybe personal interest.
Yeah, it was happenstance, really. I went off to UC Davis as a undergraduate, not having a clue really what I would do. It turned out my dorm advisor was a limnology graduate student. He knew I liked fishing, and he knew I liked science, and he said, you should take this limnology course. I took that course. I met my wife, Linda Lay, in the course, and the rest is history.
Very good. Now you've worked, I'm reading from a bio of yours, you've worked on four continents.
I've never added them up, but I guess that's true, yeah.
Yeah. Jack Green, so nature education, I know that about you, right? And I know currently you work with USU students, especially international students?
Yes, correct.
Taking them out into nature, I guess, educating them?
Yeah, I'm kind of the outdoor program fellow with an affiliate organization called International Friends Program that we are an affiliate of the university. We are our own NGO. And just about every other weekend we have something going on. We just returned from southern Utah, where we spent time in Snow Canyon and Zion National Park and had a marvelous experience down there. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about that. Where do these students come from?
These students, as I understand it, we have about 65 different countries represented. I don't know that we capture all of those different countries in our group that we take out. And our group ranges anywhere from 12 to 50. Actually, we have 50 that are signed on to go over to the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge this Saturday, which we're very excited for. We are a cross-section of planet Earth, I guess you'd say. Mm-hmm. A lot from coming from two large countries, India and China, mm-hmm. but then many Middle Eastern countries, Egypt, if you call that Middle Eastern, I guess that's actually part of the African continent, but and many Iranians, Pakistanians, and so on, and certainly sub-Saharan Africa as well, Uganda and several countries down that way.
Yeah. What's the reaction when you show them Snow Canyon or other areas?
Well, just showing them snow and ice. For many of them, they've never seen that other than in pictures before. So we do a lot of winter activities as well. But yeah, it's just ooh and ah. I mean, they've never experienced anything like this, whatever country they might come from. Then in the fall, we go up to the Tetons. And of course, that's another landscape that just sends their heads spinning, basically. So yeah, it really leaves an impact, and many friendships are formed, and yeah, they're marvelous experiences for us and them as well. Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit more about your background. What have you done?
Well, basically from the North Woods of Wisconsin and Michigan, where I spent my growing up years on a small farm, dairy farm in northern Wisconsin, and then later over to Michigan in Mount Pleasant, Michigan, which is the small city. It reminds me in ways of Logan, because it's a university town. We have Central Michigan University there, where I did my graduate and undergraduate work in sciences primarily. When I was around 8 or 9 years of age, took a trip out west to visit some relatives, and when I saw the mountains, it was all over at that point. I was totally swooned and swept away, and knew I had to spend my life out here. And then I discovered the deserts, and oh my goodness, they are a marvel in themselves, and our deep canyons, all of it.
Yeah. So both of you gentlemen have made your lives in great part out of doors, right? Outside, in nature. Yes. I wonder, Wayne Wurzbach, what does that do? What has that done for you, do you think?
Oh, I just love the beauty out there, and particularly in the West here where we've been, and some places internationally as well. I guess I get energized. You go on a backpack trip and you're exhausted, but you look around and you go, boy, I'm really glad I'm here. This is quite a special place. As you mentioned earlier, I got into photography, so that melds really well with the outdoor trips that my wife and I do. I do, you know, a lot of photography, and like to be able to share that. I was really pleased to get on the mug this year and be able to share that picture of the Wellsvilles with people.
I want to talk about that a little bit later on. Do you have a favorite place, favorite places? Or is it the latest one you've gone to?
I really like being out on the Great Salt Lake. I've done a lot of research out there over the years. It's really different. I've had graduate students go out there that are fishery students, and there's not many fish out there, of course. And they say, I don't like this place. But I like the starkness of it and the remoteness. You get very far from land. You feel maybe you're like on Mars or the moon, and you're certainly all yourself. So that's pretty special and close at hand for us, of course. I do a moderate amount of hiking up here. I practically live in Green Canyon, which is close to our home. I either cross-country ski up there or bike almost every day, or sometimes hike some of the ridges for good exercise. So that's special. My wife and I like to take short backpack into White Pine Lake up by Tony Grove, camp overnight. Really beautiful spot. There's other places we like as well. I'm also a hunter, so some of the marshes here in southern Idaho, take my dog out and do a lot of waterfowl hunting, some grouse hunting as well. And now that I've retired, I actually have enough time for some big game hunting, so I've been doing a little bit more of that as well.
Like what kind of big game?
Deer and elk.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Primarily.
Yeah. So maybe you got a bear permit or something, but
no, I like to put stuff in the freezer.
Yeah.
Is my main objective. So we're getting towards the end of our last venison. So
yeah.
Hopefully I'll be successful again this year.
I want to follow up a little bit with Great Salt Lake. Well, and later in a later segment, we'll talk about environmental concerns, but just enjoying the lake. Some people, as you well know, some people complain that, it's, you go out the lake, it's stinky. Not so much when you get out on the lake, right? How do you get out on the lake? What kind of kayak or what do you do?
Well, most of my time on the lake has actually been in one of our research boats in the Watershed Sciences Department, or as we often get assisted by various groups to go out in airboats in the shallower wetlands, Bear River Bay and Farmington Bay. So, and then hiking on Antelope Island is pretty special. If people have never hiked up to the top of Frary Peak, which is the highest point on Antelope Island, you really need to do it. You have to be a little careful in the spring. You can get into a lot of bugs, but if you time things right, it's just a spectacular hike, and you'll likely see bison and maybe some antelope, maybe even some bighorn sheep, so chuckers as well. So yeah. It's a great hike, great views, so I really recommend people do that. Once a year or so, we get out to the Spiral Jetty in the north arm of the lake, which is remoter still, and it's an interesting piece of land art. We went out 6 months ago and camped out there, and were able to take pictures of the Milky Way over the Spiral Jetty, and we had the place to ourselves. So another recommendation for people to get out onto the lake.
Oh, it does sound wonderful. Yeah, and you say out in the middle of the lake, it can feel like a kind of an alien.
Yeah.
Experience. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's different. There's most of the boating occurs down out of Salt Air, which is the very southern part of the south arm of the Great Salt Lake. And so a little bit off of Antelope Island, although now the lake is so low that the marina and Antelope Island is really not functional unless you were to take a kayak or something out. So,
yeah.
We used to do most of our research work out of the marina on Antelope Island, and so you didn't have to go very far, and you weren't going to see any other boats unless you were in the brine shrimp season, October on and into the winter, where you would occasionally run into people out there harvesting the brine shrimp cysts on the lake.
Yeah, big industry. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jack Green, I want to ask you this same thing. Favorite places? You've been a lot of places.
I have. I'm going to stay a little closer to home. I think Wayne's done a really good job of describing, what is very special about the Great Salt Lake. But closer to home here, I actually was a wilderness ranger for the Logan Ranger District here for our Naomi Wilderness, which is in the Bear River Range, and then the Wellsville. So I've hiked, all of the trails probably many, many times over that 11-year span where I worked seasonally while I was teaching. So I've kind of fallen in love with these places, along with the Bear River itself. The Bear River has these incredible wetlands where I spent a lot of time on the water, primarily in canoes, with students and family and so on. But the Bear River Range is very special in my view. I visioned it as a huge water tank. It's remarkable how much water it captures in snowpack. It happens to be well aligned with a lot of the winter storms that come through, and the geologic structure of it allows it to capture and hold a lot of that water that comes out in springs that are the headwaters of our streams. And we have several dozen streams that come out of the Bear River Range, and many of them feed into, I guess they all do, because on the east side, of course, you have the Bear Lake that these streams feed into, and here on the west side, we have what we call the Cutler Marsh and the Bear River itself all these streams eventually end up into. So it's really something, and that's actually what brought the pioneers up this way back in the 1850s. They were having, quite a severe drought at that time, and those who had been in the Cache Valley mentioned to Brigham that, we know where there's some really good grasses and water just up north of here, and so they come up to the Cache Valley, attracted to the grasses that were growing out in our marsh areas here, which are extensive, And of course, water, all the water coming out, tumbling out of these mountains. So it's very special, spectacular. We have about 15 species of endemic species wildflowers. I understand more endemic species than any other part of our high country in Utah. So that's very special. And of course, the vistas are spectacular. If you've been on Naomi Peak for a sunrise or sunset or any time, really, it's quite remarkable. The same with the Wellsvilles, going to the Wellsville side. Mm. So, we are in a very fortunate place, surrounded by these natural glories, if you will.
Yeah, we certainly are. Now, when you take students out there on any of these, to any of these places, what are you most anxious that they get from that?
Well, two things primarily. One is our friendships, okay, especially working with a lot of these students, both international and our own U.S. students. Oftentimes they haven't really connected. I oftentimes start in the fall when these students are relatively new coming into the university and so on. And they really haven't formed close friendships, if you will. Well, there's something magic about being out in these wild places on a trail and spending a lot of time together, laboring up a trail, or and then taking our breaks as we always do. They really form friendships that remain, I think, through the time they're here at the university for the most part. And the other part, of course, is just realizing what these special places mean to us. Whether it be aesthetic, spiritual, ecosystems that we have to explore, so many different ones, both out in the valley. I take them out canoeing as well for the water part of it. So just an appreciation for what's there, how it works, the nuances of it, the complexities. So I talk quite a bit, but they do most of the talking to each other, actually.
Yeah. That's a great bonding experience. Well, we're going to head toward a break, but before we do that, Jack, just one more question. I was interested in a Wild About Utah. It's fairly recent, I think. You went to a care center, and you asked the residents if they've ever been called bird brain.
Yeah.
And I assume by that you were heading toward the magnificence of a bird's brain, right?
Exactly.
So. So tell me a little bit about that, the power of that, of educating people about nature.
Right. Yeah, so as soon as you say bird brain, of course, we've all been called that at one time or another, at least I have multiple times. And that's supposed to be an insult, but in actuality, even though the bird's brains are tiny, imagine a hummingbird with a brain about the size of a BB, and that brain is capable of remarkable behaviors and learning and just adapting, etc. So even though it's a tiny brain, it's really high value or high level in neurological activity. And you get more neurons per unit, whatever micrometer, cubic micrometer, than you do in most other brains. So bird brains are pretty special in that way. Not to mention they can put half of it to sleep and remain the other half awake, so it helps them with navigation while they're migrating or being alert for predation, those types of things.
Yeah. I want to transition to appeal. I'll start with you, Wayne, to your fellow listeners to become members of Utah Public Radio. You're a longtime member of UPR, and in fact, one of the thank you gifts that people can pick up, and we urge them to consider this, is the new art mug, and it has Wayne's image of the Wellsvilles on there. Why do you think fellow listeners should consider giving whatever they can?
Kind of the tagline that I put on the mug when I submitted the entry was information with integrity. And that kind of sums things up. You can really get a lot of useful information, unbiased information from listening to Utah Public Radio and National Public Radio. I like to listen to the news a lot, both the local and the national news. It's my main source. I seldom watch the evening news. I think a little more biased depending on which station you're looking to. getting your information from, but I don't feel that with Utah Public Radio. And then there's just a lot of interesting programming coming out of all of the stations in Utah. And so my wife nags me a little bit. We pretty much have the radio on night and day and as background, and you pick up some things and you miss others, but it's really a valuable resource for us here living in Cache County.
So the way to join your support with Wayne Word Spas is to call 800-826-1495, unless you're listening to the evening repeat of the show, in which case go to upr.org. But otherwise, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Pledge your support in any amount. If you can kick in $10 a month, certainly love to send out to you this new UPR art mug with Wayne Wurtzbach's beautiful photograph of the Wellsvilles on there. So, Jack Green, the same question to you. Why should people join their support with yours?
Well, for myself, this radio station has become a family member, if you will. I feel family here. I feel community. It's just a very special, warm, welcoming place, not to mention the outstanding programming that it offers. Myself being an educator, a nature educator, thank you, there's so much that it offers. I'm constantly being updated and enlightened by many of the programs that I hear here. Climate One, I love that. I love Living on Earth is another one. I really enjoy several more tidbits that come through the day as I'm listening. So, yeah, it's just become a huge part of me. It's my number one educator, myself being an educator. And like I say, the feeling of family that it brings once you've listened very long, I think you'll feel that too.
So again, the number, and again, look at the clock. If it's saying 9 o'clock in the morning, then do call 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. For if you're listening to the evening repeat, 7 o'clock, then use upr.org, upr.org. Let me just mention that we have 10 copies available of Cache Trails. These are books donated by the Bridgeland Audubon Society. And this is a generous donation from the Bridgeland Audubon. Cache Trails, a hiking guide for trails of Cache Valley, Utah. That's for a pledge of $10 a month or more. It's been updated with new illustrations and maps. Several more trails been added. Trail data, detailed descriptions for 53 designated hikes. So only 10 of those available. So get in now with your pledge of $10 a month or more. Cache Trails is another incentive that you can get. Here's the number if you're listening in the morning, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Listening in the evening, do go to our website, upr.org. And thank you. We'll go to break and come back with more. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're looking at environmental issues. That's our focus then on this member drive edition of the program. And we're talking with Wayne Wurtzbach and Jack Green. Wayne Wurtzbach is Professor Emeritus in the Watershed Sciences Department at USU. Also a skilled photographer. His image of the Wellsville Mountains is on our new Utah Public Radio art mug. Jack Green is a nature educator. He's also a regular contributor to UPR's Wild About Utah. Gentlemen, I want to get into current environmental concerns. You, both of you are heavily involved in these concerns of trying to educate the public, trying to help with these issues. Let me start with Wayne Wurtzbach. You mentioned in the last segment changes to the Great Salt Lake. Now, obviously, you've seen changes over time. Tell me a little bit more about those changes and maybe the concerns that lead you to at this point.
Yeah, well, probably most people know, you know, we have a terminal lake, and so no water's flowing out of it. It's water only leaves by evaporation. So if you get into a really wet cycle in the climate like we had in the mid-80s, the lake rises up, and it kind of tries to raise up till that evaporation balances the inflows. And in the mid-80s, that resulted in an extremely high lake level. At times, water was when we get winds, it was blowing over Interstate 80 at the south end, and there was a lot of destruction of infrastructure around the lake. And that's when I started working out on the lake in 1985, when it was very high. But since then, we've been primarily in a 20-25-year period of drought. We've had some exceptions to that. Last year was one. It looks like this is a good water year as well. But with that decline in inflow because of less precipitation, less snow in the mountains, and some increase in water use with our growing population, the lake level, as almost all of you know, has declined to record lows 2 years ago. Came up a bit last year, which was good. But and that's been a huge change. It exposes a lot of the lake bed. Particularly the biggest issue has been out of Farmington Bay, which is close to our population centers. And when the wind blows, we get a lot of dust blowing up, which doesn't help with people's health. We already have bad air quality a lot of the year, both in Cache Valley and down on the Wasatch Front. And when you add that dust to it, it's a bigger concern. There's heavy metals, something called cyanotoxins from the algae that are in the lake, and those contribute to those health concerns. Another big issue beyond the dust is that as the lake declines, that you have that water's evaporating, but it's leaving behind salts. So as the lake goes down, it becomes saltier and saltier. The largest bay, Gilbert Bay, or what people refer to as the South Arm, when it was at a high level in the mid-80s, there was about 70 grams per liter of salt in there, which is about double what seawater is. But now as the lakes declined, it was increasing up and got up to about 180, 185 grams per liter. And we have particular organisms in the lake, notably the brine shrimp and brine flies that have evolved to withstand and, in fact, almost need those high salinities to survive. But both of those critters have optima maybe around 100 grams per liter. And as salinity increased and increased as with the drought and water use, the salinities got to a point where they were stressing those organisms. We think the brine shrimp were close to collapsing, although we didn't have good monitoring data on them. And the brine shrimp were also really being threatened. And as you know, both of those organisms are very important for bird food. We have millions and millions of birds come through and rely on those food resources. And then we have, as we mentioned in the last segment, the brine shrimp industry that goes out and harvests the resting eggs that float on the surface of the lake. That's something probably a $70 to $100 million industry. And so that was being threatened as well. So those are the sorts of changes. Going back to Farmington Bay, I've worked a lot on Farmington Bay, both the water quality in particular. But as the lake has declined, we've lost about 80% of Farmington Bay and likewise 80% of Bear River Bay. Mm. And those two bays are particularly important for the birds that come to the lake. They're both have rivers flowing into them. The Bear River flows into the Bear River Bay, of course, and the Jordan River and some creeks flow into Farmington Bay. And so they're essentially estuaries in that they're fresh water at the ends where the rivers are coming in, and then they gradually become saltier and saltier as they get closer to the main lake. And that range of salinity then provides for a lot of different habitats for the invertebrates that live in the lake, and we have different ones that are out than are out in the South Arm. So we have lots of gnats. Some of those are biting gnats, and I mentioned you want to avoid that area of the lake in the early spring because you can get a lot of bites. But that, all of that provides a tremendous food resource for the birds. But I mentioned earlier, if you hike up on Ferry Peak, you can get a view of Farmington Bay. And now it's mostly a Farmington mudflat and just a wide swath of the Jordan River kind of flowing down through the middle of it. So that's been, a huge major change in the lake.
Mm-hmm. Jack Green, I want to maybe have you talk about the Great Salt Lake as well. I'm sure you have concerns there. You said you're going to take a group out to the Migratory Bird Refuge.
Yes.
Have there been the changes there? Is it still thriving, that place, or have there been changes?
Yeah, well, I will get an update in a couple days.
Okay.
As I understand it, thus far, the Bear River Migratory Bird Refuge has not been unduly impacted. It seems that we're getting basically the same number of species as far as populations. Of course, they vary from year to year, but the overall trend seems to be holding relatively well, what we'd consider to be pretty much what they have been historically. Again, we have rises and falls in everything, including bird populations, but I think the overall trend is it's fairly stable at this point. I'm not aware of any major changes in any particular species or numbers at this point.
So the Great Salt Lake, in general, what can be done? I know both of you work in this, trying to get the word out.
I'm going to throw it back to Brian Steed. I hope he's listening. I know Brian has a huge part of his work schedule in at least the last few years has been dealing with that situation, which, as Wayne very well described, has so many implications for the future of birds as well as the Wasatch Front and Utah in general. I mean, that's an iconic lake. The first thing I knew of Utah was it had a Great Salt Lake that you could float in, and I thought it was pretty cool. But anyway, I had no idea about all the other things that go on with that lake. And certainly our air quality is a major issue, even without the dust. But now the dust is compounding that as well, all these toxic metals that Wayne mentioned that on a bad day will come blowing in onto the Wasatch Front, which creates a dust and something that you do not want to inhale or do not want to have laying around your windowsills or whatever. And then, too, the lake effect. I've heard from, roughly 8%, 9% of our snowpack in the Wasatch Range, our ski resorts, et cetera, depend on that lake, that there is a lake effect where you get that higher humidity, the temperatures are different and creates more precipitation that hits our mountains. So, and that's, of course, critical as, again, the trend for our snowpack is not good other than a really good year like last year and this year, but that will change. And Wayne mentioned a 25 to 30 year drought period, and that's expected to continue on. Another thing, too, is, we're looking at the possibility of the Winter Olympics returning in 2034, as I understand it, and it looks like it's, kind of a done deal, but not quite official yet. But, these folks flying in from all over the world looking for the Great Salt Lake and beautiful snow and so on, well, if that snow has a brown dust coating, it just isn't as attractive, not to mention it really lowers the albedo effect, so you get more rapid melting, et cetera. So all these critical concerns for that lake. And who knows, there might be a mass migration out of the Wasatch Front if we can't turn this thing around. It's just not nearly as habitable or inviting for folks to live in that type of situation.
Mm. So beyond the lake, as we head toward another break, I wonder, Jack, do you have other concerns, beyond the lake? I'm sure there's many concerns to be worried about.
You shouldn't have asked that question. No, I will go with the elephant in the room right now, which is, of course, climate change. And you hear that almost hourly now, or read it, or hear it somewhere. But anyway, yeah, it's really difficult, obviously. I mean, fossil fuels have been a part that has raised us out of poverty over the last few hundred years, as it has many other parts of the world. We're very reliant on them, our primary sources of fuel for transportation, for heating, cooling, on and on. But unfortunately, we woke up probably, I don't know, 40 years ago now, to the fact that, oh, gee, when you burn these fossil fuels, they result in greenhouse gases, it traps heat, et cetera, raising the temperature of the planet at a very accelerated rate. Again, the planet's had its ups and downs with temperatures throughout its 4.5 billion year history. But this is really accelerated by human activity, and we figured that out many decades ago. So again, going back to the Great Salt Lake, well, if, you know, these warmer temperatures result in more rapid evaporation of the lake, so that's another major influence, not only the diversions for human use, primarily agriculture, but also warmer temperatures evaporates faster, and the streams feeding it, again, don't have as much water because of this reduced snowpack that's also a result of a changing climate. So we have all these climate change factors. Not to mention just heat itself that causes many health-related issues, just the higher temperatures. People, especially those working in the fields and those who are compromised health-wise otherwise, you know, are really impacted by higher temperatures and such. So that's a huge one and so difficult to deal with because, again, it is our primarily energy source, planetary as well as in this country. And we all like, you know, heating and cooling and lights and electricity for our computers and whatever. But that all is causing, you know, this elephant in the room, which is, and not to mention acid rain in the waters, and especially the ocean where the pH is dropping. And some of those organisms, which produce a good percent of our oxygen in the atmosphere, are taking a hit. So where is that going to go to? So you have to look at the acidification. So on and on. But anyway, air quality in general, okay, because we are in this Wasatch Front where we have these narrow valleys and we have these inversions where that trap the air, very poor circulation as air is concerned. And that, of course, is difficult. We continue to grow rapidly. I think our own county here, I believe, is the most rapidly growing county in the nation this past 2023 year. So yeah, we have all these wonderful offerings, the beautiful landscapes, and the jobs. You know, our economy is just, you know, just one of the strongest in the nation, if not on the planet right now. And so we have all these attractions to this wonderful place that we live in. But the downside is transportation produces greenhouse gases, produces headaches for the planners for transportation, on and on. So we just caught in a really difficult situation, conundrum here. It's just going to take a whole lot of very intelligent people, which I work with, our international and national students. They, I think, have some of the solutions, but then there's the politics and the economic side of it that really has to be looked at. We want a strong economy, of course. We all want to live comfortably, et cetera. But there are other countries around the world who are living as high standard as we are and use far fewer resources. So we need to really take a lessons from them and try to integrate them into our economics and so on. And then it gets political.
Yeah, yes, that's always the, yeah, the problem, right? Wayne Wurtzbach, are there environmental concerns top of mind for you?
Well, just add one addendum to Jack's comment. It really is maybe the last 40 or 50 years that we've had really good data on climate change and measurements of CO2, really good measurements showing them headed upward. But the addendum is that scientists Arrhenius about 140 years ago said, well, if we burn fossil fuels, we're going to warm up the planet. So we've known this for a long, long time. And it's taken us quite a while to finally start to make some serious efforts. But as Jack said, the politics are difficult, the economics are difficult. So we're not making the progress we need to make on climate change.
Well, let's head toward a break. In the next segment, maybe we'll mention some solutions. Maybe end on a hopeful note, right? But before we get there, let's take a break. So, Jack, once again, what? Why should listeners become members?
Well, if you don't become a member, you're really missing out on supporting one of the real treasures, if you will, of this valley and this entire region. Of course, this radio connects with folks in our region, not only in Utah, but in the neighboring states and so on. And as I mentioned before, I am educated by this station. And as Wayne mentioned, integrity that you will see on his mug. I think they are really after, you know, the way things are, not the way we wish them to be, unfortunately. But, yeah, they are, I think, very careful about what they put on the, out on the air, that it's well vetted. And you can take it to the bank, basically.
Wayne, what would you say about that?
Well, I agree with Jack on all the points he made. It's fun to listen to. We have a lot of diversity. I listen a lot to the news, which often isn't that fun to listen to. But there's also great music programs, comedy programs. You can kind of get it all. So I really urge people to donate, to help support it. It doesn't come for free. Tom here needs a salary. All the people working in the control room here, they need salaries, and they have to buy programming from the national NPR, and that costs as well. So, if you can donate, what's possible for you.
So join your support with Wayne, with Jack. They're longtime members of UPR. They see the value in this. If you see the value as well, we'd love to have you on board, either renewing or becoming a new member of Utah Public Radio. Just a fast and easy process. If you're listening in the morning, 800-826-1495 is the number. 800-826-1495. A quick phone call, 800-826-1495. If you're listening to the evening broadcast, upr.org is the place to go, upr.org. On that website, you can see a picture of Wayne's beautiful design on the UPR art mug for 2024, beautiful photograph of the Wellsvilles, and that you can get for $10 a month. I would love to send that out to you, and Wayne would as well. I'm sure he wants to get that image out there as far and wide as we can that benefits UPR. We also have this wonderful incentive, thank you gift, Cache Trails, a hiking guide for the trails of Cache Valley, Utah. This is the 2023 edition, updated, and there's detailed descriptions, trail data for 53 designated hikes. We only have 10 of these, so call now, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Or for the evening broadcast, upr.org. And a big thank you. We'll go to break, come back with the final segment. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. It's a special member drive edition of the program. We have some great experts on the environment who are also members of UPR. And we're talking with Wayne Wurtzbach, who is Professor Emeritus at USU, also a skilled photographer. In fact, his image, as you've been hearing, is image of the Wellsville Mountains is on a new UPR art mug. Jack Green is a nature educator, also a regular contributor to UPR's Wild About Utah. So we outlined some concerns, Jack Green, in the last segment, possibly depress some people. Let's leave them on a hopeful note. You mentioned that, you know, you work with young people, and you're seeing some hope there, I guess, and some possible solutions.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And I will look to the elders as well. So I see this as an intergenerational thing. I see this as a collaborative effort that absolutely needs to occur at this very critical turning point, if you will, in our future. And I have a bunch of grandkids. I work with hundreds of students. And I want them to have a future that we all want them to have, which starts with a livable planet, a habitable planet, if you will. I mean, the cyanobacteria and probably the cockroaches and a few other things will be fine. They'll thrive with whatever. But we would like something a little beyond that, including us. So I see hope, yes, absolutely, in this collaborative part with the youth and the elders. And the youth I work with, some of them have been jaded, if you will, that say, well, what's the use? You know, it's changing. We can't change it. We don't, you know, we're just frustrated and kind of ready to throw in the towel. But in reality, the majority of them, I think, do see some hope and are willing to take action in a way that will make a difference. And I work with many student organizations and youth groups and so on. And the youth are coming on very strong over the last several cycles of our politics, where they've had elections that have really made a difference. So I think they realize that they can make a difference now by going to the voting booth, which is a real eye-opener, because historically youth have not fared well. Those who are voting age have not represented themselves very well in numbers. But that's increasing, and it needs to continue to increase, as we do as elders. Okay, we need to go to the voting booth. So there you can make a difference. I mean, vetting, whether it's Democrat, Republican, Independent, Green Party, whatever, look at their voting records or look at their campaign speeches and platforms to see where they are. And if they align well with your values and your hopes for your future, well, you vote for that, irregardless of party. So that's definitely the youth, the voting, the collaboration between the elders as mentors, if you will, and youth who have the energy, the creativity, the burning desire to really make a difference. I see hope.
Same question to you, Wayne Wurtzbach. Do you see hopeful signs of solutions that you're excited about, or at least hopeful about?
Yeah, well, as we talked about earlier, I've been involved with Great Salt Lake for 35 years, something like that. And 35 years ago, people were saying, oh, the lake goes up, the lake goes down. And there was a quote from the last Olympics. National Geographic wrote an article about Salt Lake Valley and the venues that were going to be there. And the quote that stuck with me is that Salt Lake Valley residents see the Salt Lake as a putrid, fly-infested sump, which isn't a good thing to have in a nationally circulated or internationally circulated magazine. But since that time, things have changed a lot. People really care. It almost took, well, in some cases, it took reaching a record low level for people to finally wake up, but they have. And so we haven't really got the legislation we need yet, but the legislatures are making some efforts and putting money forward. We need a lot more, but it's on the table, and everybody's saying we want to save the Great Salt Lake. And so the talk is right. We need to get a little more willingness to contribute to that. So, you know, on a personal level, you know, we need to reduce the turf grass, much of which never gets used. It's just there. Or I've been cutting down excess trees on my property because I never watered them much, but then I realized, well, they're getting their water from somewhere, and so and that water could be flowing towards the Great Salt Lake. So everybody needs to make an effort. The farmers that are raising alfalfa and other crops need to get on board and find ways to reduce their water use, because that's a major draw on the water that otherwise would flow into the Great Salt Lake. But I think everybody's talking in the right direction, so I'm hopeful that we can come around and save the lake.
Well, we'll end the program on those hopeful notes. Thank you, gentlemen. We've been talking with Jack Green and Wayne Wurtzbach. Thanks both for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
Thanks for being members of UPR as well. Just one last appeal here. Join your support with the Waynes and with the Jacks and others who have called. So if you're listening in the morning, call 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. I'll say it again, 1-800-826-1495. And if you're listening in the evening, go to our website, upr.org, upr.org. Have a couple of incentives. We've got the wonderful UPR art mug, which has Wayne Wurtzbach's beautiful photograph of the Wellsvilles on it. That's for a pledge of $10 a month. I hope you'll pick that up. And or you can get for $10 a month or more the Cache Trails book. This is a hiking guide for the trails of Cache, Utah. Updated, 53 designated hikes. Only 10 of those left. So get in with that now. Your support for UPR and for Access Utah at 800-826-1495 or upr.org. And a big thank you. Thanks, everybody.